Hello and welcome to the podcast. Support us by subscribing and sharing. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to help out the podcast, you can always chuck us a couple of quid on Patreon. Joining me as always is my co-host,
Craig.
And I'm your host, Adam. You're listening to Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
Mortal Kombat!
That was alright. That's not too bad, considering we've had such a long break, Craig.
Yes, we have. Things have been more broken than others, let's face it.
Yeah, we were in the swing of things and starting to get a few episodes going, and then someone decided to go fuck himself up.
Yep, we were back and then my back went. It was a whole thing. Do you know what's really humbling?
What is humbling?
Spending 2 weeks lying on your side, unable to move.
Oh yeah, man, I've been there. So much sympathy for you, dude. You sounded like you're in a lot of pain.
I still am. Like, even now, so my brand new super firm orthopedic mattress has arrived yesterday. Honestly, it's amazing.
Nice.
And it's what I'm sat on right now because I can't sit in the usual recording space. And because that, if I sat down for after about 20 seconds, my spine twisted a bit. And I was like, cool, this isn't happening. So if there's any unexpected audio issues, it's because I'm recording for the bedroom, not the office.
Yeah, that's fair.
Good luck, listener.
And you were on a nice cocktail of drugs as well.
Oh baby, I was. So
you're on the good stuff, weren't you?
I was on the diazepam, and then I had like military grade cocodamol and codeine, naproxen, but I had to take that with some a metrazone so it didn't burn my stomach insides. But I've slowly weaned off now. I'm pretty much now I'm just down to the ibuprofen.
Oh no, it's okay, cool. So we're getting there.
Getting there. A friend of mine did give me some Xanax.
Oh wow.
I tell you what, if you're looking for a good time,
Xanax. I might have to pop round to pay a visit.
There was one, you know, I'm a relatively open book. There was one day, I think it was the second day I got my painkillers, the military grade cocodamol or codeine, it was one or the other, and I was like, oh, that's a twinge in my back, I'll just pop a codeine. That's a twinge in my back, I'll just pop a codeine. Dude, I took 25 pills that day. I did the maths the next day when I was throwing up, like, whoops.
Yeah, I'm quite lucky. So when I did my back in, we sound like two old fucks here, but when I did my back in, obviously, Helen, being a doctor, she's very militant with how much I could take and when I could take it. So obviously, thank you very much, because I do think I've got a fairly addictive personality. I think I would have been up your street as well with like just munching them down. Because if you've, again, never experienced back pain, you don't know what it's like, how debilitating, how painful it is. Just even, you know, you just move in a certain like way and it just tweaks and it's just fucking horrendous.
It is, and it's one of those things where, like, I've seen people hunched over in the past, just been like, I mean, how bad is it? How bad is it to stand up straight? I tell you what, it's bad.
It is bad. Speaking of bad things, nice little segue there. Well, strong. I tried. Mortal Kombat!
The 1995 version, we should say.
It is, yes. There has been a more recent movie. Have you seen that one?
I haven't. I think I started it, turned it off because it didn't start with Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And then I think I spoke to you and you were like, don't bother.
Yeah, it's really disappointing because there was so much hype for it, especially with the trailer coming out. And I think most people were a bit pissed off with the sort of like audience insert character called Cole, which was, you've got so many characters in this movie, in this franchise, that you don't need for a studio to then go create their own character for it to be the gateway for the audience. You can have any of the other characters. And one of the, I think, quite annoying things looking back at it was that the character Kano was almost like that himself anyway, because he was asking all the questions. He's like, why is this? Why is that? What's that? So you almost just, you didn't need that character. And a lot of people
let me just check. Was Cole a bad guy?
No, Cole's like the good guy who turns out to be like a relative of Scorpion or some weird shit, you know, some long distance. Just like falls down so much because there's so many beloved characters in this franchise that they just didn't have enough screen time because they were just focused on this fucking guy that no one gave a shit about. But yeah, I mean,
that's, yeah, I mean, you're right. That, and that's kind of, you know, we're jumping off the back of a recent-ish Street Fighter episode, which, you know what, put two movies hand in hand that basically should have been the same thing.
Yeah.
But that is peppered with character and character and character and character. So for them to again go like, you know what this movie needs? Another character. It's just a bit like, okay, well, I suppose so.
Yeah, it very much a shrug of the shoulders.
But yeah, I've not seen it, so I can't hold judgment. I might end up loving it.
So if for the audience, if you've not seen this version of Mortal Kombat, the 1995 movie, it's about three unknowing martial artists that are summoned to a mysterious island to compete in a tournament whose outcome will decide the fate of the world. Roll trailer.
Each of us, there burns the fury of a warrior. In every generation, a few are chosen to prove it.
One of you three will decide the outcome of the tournament.
Three strangers will travel to the mystical realm of Outworld to defend our people against Shang Tsung.
You will die.
And his forces of darkness. In an ancient tournament, one more victory.
Your soul is mine.
And our world is theirs.
It has begun.
Combat begins.
It's 1991. Ed Boon and John Tobias have developed a little known game called Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
It was reportedly developed in only 10 months and released in arcades in August in 1992 and then later on home console in 1993. So,
and you better believe I paid the shit out of it.
Oh, 100%. I was going to ask, what do you remember of the of Mortal Kombat, you know, its inception as a game and, you know, then obviously evolving into the franchise that it is?
I had a Mega Drive.
Oh, yeah.
I had Mortal Kombat. I had the hours. It all came together. It was a great way to waste a childhood.
100%. What was your favourite Mortal Kombat?
Like, favourite Mortal Kombat game or character?
Yeah, the game.
Oh. Number one, just the OG.
Oh, fair.
I think I had two or three.
I think two for me was the best one. Like,
there was... Because there was... I might be confusing this with Street Fighter or something else. Maybe Tekken, but there's fatalities in, like, special move fatalities in Mortal Kombat, right?
100%, yeah, that is the key selling point of Mortal Kombat.
And weren't there also, like, nicealities, or,
so that's definitely Mortal Kombat 2, where you started having, like, things like friendship, babeality.
Yeah, babeality, that's it. So, there was one character where I didn't know what the buttons were, but, like, muscle memory kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the character, but I was just like, A, B, 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 A, C, C, up, up, down, 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 or whatever. And then just a load of puppies ran onto screen.
Oh, nice.
And took out the, like, as your finishing move, a load of puppies did the job for you.
See, I remember the OG Scorpion finisher where he rips off his mask and it's a skull and flames you, his down, down, start.
Nice.
That's just, like, ingrained.
I feel like, was there a Goro move which was like a head rip / spine?
Well, you couldn't play Goro in the original Mortal Kombat.
No, but in one of them, was there...
I'm trying to think, because in Mortal Kombat 2, Goro was replaced by another character, I can't remember. Kintaro. Was it Kintaro? Something like that.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of Blanka then from Street Fighter, but I swear there was a... head / spine.
Oh, you're thinking of Sub-Zero. That was his original fatality.
Cool. Because he was... All right, cool. That's fine then. Because he was always my favourite character.
Yeah, yeah. So with that, this is now being made into a movie. It's been in development since its sort of earliest inceptions of the video game. Directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. So yeah. The other Paul Anderson.
No. The other, not Wes Anderson. No, the other one.
Yeah, sorry, the other. I think that's, yeah, I always get confused which is actually.
It's Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul Thomas Anderson.
It's Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson.
And Paul W.S. Anderson.
That's the one, thank you. So, do we know Paul W. Hansen's work? I think we do.
Did you just call him Paul W. Hansen?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, Paul W. Umbop.
He's a pretty handsome guy. He's married to, what's her name?
Millie Jovovich.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, previous episode of Event Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Resident Evil 1 through all.
Yes.
Shopping, which you messaged me about, I've not seen.
Yeah, that was, I've not seen that. I just picked up on it because that movie is what allowed him to go on to direct Mortal Kombat. And it's a bit of a who's who in British acting.
Is it like Jude Law and Ray Winston and people like that? Or?
Oh, it's Pertwee. Not Ray Winston.
Sean Pertwee?
Yeah.
Ah, Dog Soldiers himself?
Mr. Dog Soldiers himself.
Nice.
And what's her name? Married Beckinsale. To Jude Law at one point.
Kate Beckinsale, I don't know.
No, not the fucking... it will come to me eventually. I'll scream it out in like about an hour's time. but as you said, Resident Evil, Event Horizon. He also did Soldier.
I like that movie. I mean, very good in terms of it's not very good. It's just it's a relatively like, oh, we're going to take from this movie and take from this movie. But hasn't that got what's his name? Fake Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah, fucking hell, what's his name?
He played Bruce Lee in Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Jason Scott Lee.
Funnily enough, was auditioned for Liu Kang in this movie.
That would work.
I think it would work. And I always felt like, you know, whenever I try to remember this movie, I always think for some reason he is Jason Scott Lee. But also, yeah, Paul W.S. Hanson. he did and wrote he wrote and directed Alien vs. Predator as well. He's got some skeletons in the closet. He's got some good, he's got some bad. We'll forgive him.
I would argue that is the worst of the Alien Predator franchise mix up.
Yeah, that and two.
I mean, this is guilty pleasures. I quite like Requiem.
Okay, well
hey man, you put out a movie directed by the Brothers Strauss.
So just to give you a little bit of an idea as well, because obviously this has notoriously one of the worst sequels ever made.
Annihilation,
well done. This was obviously a box office success, one of the best video game adaptation movies that's ever been made, or I'd say successful. And with this, New Line Cinema wanted Paul W.S. Anderson to do the sequel, and with that he went on to do Event Horizon instead, so in 1997.
Better choice.
And I think we even mentioned this in the Event Horizon episode, that how much regret Ian Wyth had in not taking the helm of the Mortal Kombat sequel because it was so shit. And this
but
is why,
from a personal choice, like, you choose Event Horizon, right? Like,
I mean, I thank him for it, because Event Horizon is one of my favourite sort of sci-fi horror movies ever made. And with that, this is why he then became such a linchpin in the Resident Evil franchise, because he wanted to shepherd it, as it were.
Yeah.
So we kind of mentioned Ed Boon and John Tobias. They were creators of Mortal Kombat, the game. They were also credited as writers on this game, on this movie.
Okay.
And with this, this is where a little factoid here, a little Easter egg. Boon and Tobias is where you get the name of Noob Saibot, one of the characters, because it's Tobias Boon spelt backwards.
Nice.
So if you remember Mortal Kombat, the video game, you had Reptile as a secret character. You know, he had it in like Shang Tsung's dungeon or some shit,
and
it
was
it was like, you have to do something to find me or something like that. And then with that, there was like a bit of code that said Noob Saibot, and everyone thought it was another secret character, but they didn't then introduce him till Mortal Kombat 2.
Okay, cool.
Just a little one. But Kevin Droney, he's the, I'd probably say, the writer on the movie. He's very much TV writer. Did Highlander TV series.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, in it. and probably the one thing that we obviously we know, or I'd say this movie's loved for, is the soundtrack.
Yes.
So this film tracks. Do you ever have the soundtrack? Did you have it on CD?
No, I didn't.
I definitely had this, and I had the Annihilation sound. The Annihilation soundtrack's pretty good as well. And it went platinum in less than 2 weeks.
I just want to quickly talk about Annihilation, because people may be like, oh, how bad is it? Well, if I'm correct, and I am,
yes.
Obviously, let's do a comparison. In Street Fighter, for you, the day that Bison graced your life was the worst of your life. For me, it was just a Tuesday. Great line.
Yes.
Hands down, great line.
Great line. Whereas in a shooting movie.
Mortal Kombat Annihilation is, you're alive. Yes. And now you shall die.
Yeah, that's terrible writing. Man. Especially it sets the tone straight away in like 5 minutes. Like, right, I'm in for a piece of shit.
Let's just be honest. One of those movies was written on a plane and it was not the one you think.
So, Christopher Lambert. Lord Raiden. Obviously, we probably best know him from Highlander. Fortress. You ever seen that movie?
I have seen Fortress.
You have seen it with Kurt Will Smith? Yeah. Ah, okay. That's a piece of shit. Do you know who was first choice for the role of Raiden?
Sean Connery.
Oh, well done. Yes.
Is it actually?
It is. Sean Connery is just that person, isn't it? It's just like, who do we get to play some sort of fucking wizard? Oh, yeah, get that Scottish guy.
I read the other day
that
he was...
Chinese Lord of Thunder.
They originally wanted him as Bricktop in Snatch.
Fuck off, really?
Yeah.
No,
seriously.
That'd be interesting to see. You know, one of those things where it's like, I wish I could watch an alternative version.
Yeah.
Where they had that, but something tells me...
I don't care if he's Muhammad, I'm hard, Bruce Lee, he's not fighting. It doesn't quite work, but I quite love it all the same.
apparently Sean Connery just wanted to go play golf and wasn't really interested in a physical role, which...
Yeah.
What? Having watched this movie like 100 times, Christopher Lambert, I don't think does one bit of stunt work or
does like one flip.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah, he fucking flips Liu Kang. Like
flips Liu Kang, that's it. Yeah, he doesn't do the flip, he flips Liu Kang.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, do you ever watch those weird YouTube videos of like what people call like Bushido, where it's like some guy would be like, oh yeah, I can like disable this person by touching him or like channeling his chi, and then I'll do like just fucking make him faint or collapse or some shit like that.
I'll be honest, most of my YouTube viewing is spent watching competitive eating.
Yeah, nice. Do you watch that guy with your kind of long hair, beard?
Yeah, Beard Meets Food. Yeah,
Beard Meets Food. That's the one. Yeah, I like him.
Same. just a little insight into how my last month and a half has been.
Oh yeah, we need to do some food challenges. That'd be quite good. Robin Sho plays Liu Kang. So he's been in video game hell in terms of films. He's done the Street Fighter, the Chun-Li movie. That was absolutely dreadful. He also did the other, probably less known video game, Dead or Alive. He did the movie for that. Pretty sure.
I have no idea what the fuck that is.
Yeah, exactly. But Robin Sho is an excellent fight choreographer. And he really helped out the movie, which we'll get to when we start talking about the movie. But just to keep that known, the lead choreographer in this movie is called Patty Johnson.
Is that, sorry, Pat E. Johnson or Patty?
Pat E.
Got it.
Yes. Lyndon Ashby, he's the Jake Cage. Maybe best known as a sheriff in Teen Wolf in the TV show. I don't know if you ever watched that.
I didn't watch that shit. He's in something else, which is like, oh, there you are, as like a soldier or a something or another. It's like, it's not Hail Caesar, but it's something like that, where it's like, there's a million faces to look at here. And
he's been in things.
Yeah, he's done some stuff. Don't worry about it.
famously killed off in the first minute of Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Iron Man 3, that's what I'm thinking of.
Was he in Iron Man 3?
Yeah, as like Commander.
Maybe. Well, I'm going to butcher this name. Kerry Hiroyuki Tawaga. Why not?
I'll edit around it.
Shang Tsung. Funnily enough, he played Hayachi in the Tekken movie. Cool. You probably might know him better in...
License to Kill, baby.
He was. He's also Krull in Planet of the Apes. which
The Charlton Heston one?
Yes.
Or the Tim Burton one?
The Tim Burton one.
Okay. I mean, I haven't seen either for a long old time, but I will take your word for it.
And I suppose it'd be quite tricky to tell who it is under all that monkey makeup.
Oh, I don't know. You could tell who Michael Clarke Duncan is in that movie.
True. Bridget Wilson Sampras, she plays Sonya Blade. Yes. Probably best known for Billy Madison.
Billy Madison and for Knowing What We Did Last Summer.
Yes. She is also Meredith in Last Action Hero, Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter.
Cool. Nice. Yeah. Good for her.
Originally, Cameron Diaz was actually cast.
Oh, wow.
Does Cameron Diaz make this movie better? Because there's a few reasons why I don't really like Bridget Wilson in this movie. And it's not really her fault, I don't think. She basically gets flown onto set day one because Cameron Diaz breaks her wrists during training for the movie. So when you watch some of her fight scenes and things like that, you're like, oh, this is like, considering how much the movie is focused on fighting, and you're watching her and you're like, this just, she just doesn't hold her own, you know what I mean? So, and she only has one fight scene and it's shit.
Sonya Blade,
yeah. Talessa Soto, she plays Kitana. Where do we know her from?
License to Kill, baby. Yeah.
Probably, I think, the best James Bond song. You got a license to kill.
It is a good song. I mean, I assume we're taking out A View to a Kill.
No, License to Kill, isn't it?
No, I know. But as in not including... Because A View to a Kill is the best James Bond song. Because it's absolute... And we will dance into the fire. And then right at the end, it's like this whole song.
I imagine you shimmying your shoulders when you're singing that.
Shimmy. I don't want to disagree with you, and I can't. No, it's this crazy song that has nothing to do with A View to a Kill. And he sings a dance into the fire. With a view to a kill. And it's like, all right, Simon Le Bon, you had some fun. I'm View to a Kill for me. Just because it's a stupid song.
Fair enough. Trevor Goddard, he plays Kano. Originally a boxer from Croydon. He's been in things like background. You know, he was in the Pirates of the Caribbean as Grapple, one of Barbossa's crew members.
Cool.
Funnily enough, Kano in the original Mortal Kombat game is meant to be, I think, like half Chinese, Japanese, or something like that. But he's like some Asian descent. And with this, when they then brought on Trevor Goddard, they were like so impressed with him that they were like, right, well, we'll just make Kano Australian. And he's like, but I'm not Australian. I'm fucking from London. I've got a Cockney accent. And it was just like, I always find that sometimes when you do see, like in air quotes, Australians, and you're like, they sound very British. You know what I mean? Like, or sound... Like, you know, that I think certain nationalities confuse Cockney with Australian, don't they?
Do you reckon that they based Kano, the Australian version that they've kind of conjured up, on a different character from a different film? Because I think they have.
Well, you said, but from what I've read, they were just like, right, Kano is now Australian. And then from then on, from the movie, in all the subsequent franchise releases in the Mortal Kombat game, Kano is Australian.
Yeah. I would argue that one morning someone watched Commando and was like, you know what would be a good idea? An Australian bad guy.
Ah, yeah.
Kano is so very close to... What's his name?
It's not Bennett, is it?
No, he promised to kill him last and he lied. To whoever the fucking chainmail-wearing Freddie Mercury guy is in Commando.
Is Bennett's name of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character?
No, Bennett's the name of Kling Kring Kring Warriors Come Out to Play.
Is it? No, pause. We're going to fucking check this out. I'm pretty sure. He is Sully.
Sully. Okay, cool. So I think going back... Right. You were both wrong.
I said it was Bennett.
You said Arnold Schwarzenegger was Bennett.
Is Bennett's name of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character? No, I didn't. I was confused.
I've got the recording.
You were, because you were confusing me. I was like, oh, is it Bennett? And I was like, nah, maybe that's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And you were like, no, it's definitely Bennett's the fucking Sully character.
So we were both wrong. But yeah, so yeah, I think they watched Commando and were like, we need a Bennett. We need a Bennett in Mortal Kombat.
That's fair enough. And then lastly, you have Chris Casamassa. He plays Scorpion, a very accomplished martial artist. And you also have Francis Petit. He plays Sub-Zero. Yes. Now, interestingly about Sub-Zero, and why you don't really see much about him, is that, A, just a little factoid that Francis Petit was the highest ranking martial artist on the set. He had like 3 black belts in different disciplines.
Cool.
And so he was heavily involved in the production of the movie since its early conceptions in the 90s. And this is why, well, they couldn't find an actor to fit Sub-Zero. That's why Petit plays him. But because of his involvement behind the camera, that's why you see very little of Sub-Zero, which I found really interesting when I first watched this movie, because I was always a little bit like, yeah, like Scorpion and Sub-Zero are like your big franchise characters. They're like, you know, if you even look now on any of these sort of advertisements or, you know, any of the commercials for any Mortal Kombat game, it's always heavily focused on Scorpion or Sub-Zero.
That's because they're the best characters. Get they're over here! I mean, come on.
Characters. Right. Rog. Hello, Mr. Ebert.
Oh, dear.
He said he was right in the middle and noted that fans might be disappointed by the film's killing being much less brutal than the notoriously violent Mortal Kombat video game. Not too wrong. This is a 15.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat famously brought in the video game rating system.
Cool.
And so this is why, you know, if you are a parent, you don't let your kids play violent video games. Or let them watch The Sopranos, which I unfortunately have been doing with little Amy. But I do cover her eyes when there's any...
You cover her eyes? That's cute.
I cover her eyes when there's any sort of gratuitous sex or violence, which happens every 5 minutes. Yeah. So
you're just playing a nice game of peekaboo with her. It's lovely.
Exactly.
I'm going through a rewatch of a load of 90s movies at the moment.
What are you watching?
Oh, I rewatched From Dusk Till Dawn.
Okay, nice.
And A, amazing movie. I love
that
film.
It is a pretty good movie. We've not done that on this
show. We haven't, because it's not a guilty pleasure. It's just good.
I think it could fall in there.
I strong disagree. But yeah, I remember watching that as like an 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back now, just being like, fuck, my parents were responsible.
Yeah, there's definitely some movies where I kind of go, maybe I was at what my dad might have felt at the right time to see. You know what I mean? I think you know, you can use that parental judgment and just go, all right, we'll go and watch something that's slightly violent. And, you know, maybe if I explain the context of things, you know, and use them as life lessons, it's like, you shouldn't do that.
Well, Taryn's kids are really into their martial arts. They do kickboxing.
Oh, yeah.
And they've just hit the belt in which they can do sparring.
Oh, sweet. Cool.
Yeah. So they've got the kit and they're getting delivered this weekend. They're going to start knocking 7 shades of shit out of each other every day. It's going to be great. But I was watching Kill Bill one day and they came in like, what's this? What's Kill Bill? And I was like, yeah, I can't show you any of this. Anyway, the next day I showed them some of Kill Bill. And all I showed them was it was in Kill Bill 2, the bit where she meets Pai Mei and has the kung fu fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
chops
like,
her head off.
Pai Mei, the old wizard kind of master.
Yeah. Oh, right,
There's no gratuitous violence. There's no this, there's no that, there's no the other. But I had to kind of finish and I kind of paused and I was like, right, I want you guys to repeat after me. We didn't watch all of Kill Bill. We only watched some of Kill Bill. And there was no blood.
It's the four secret words between you and your kid. Don't tell your mum.
Yeah. Well, no, I told her straight away. I was like, I just want you to know they've seen some of Kill Bill.
Mm.
Not all of it. I need to emphasise that.
Not all of it.
Because, again, like, I saw Kill Bill, it come out in 2002, so I was 11. That was wildly irresponsible of my parents.
That's fair. 100%. So, budget, $20 million.
Yep.
We obviously know this is a success. How much do you think it made at the box office?
$67 million.
It made $122 million.
Fuck. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, and that's where you kind of realise why W.S. Anderson's had a bit of a carte blanche since.
Yeah.
You know, and you're making that kind of moolah back.
Well, this is the thing with him. It's like all of his films have an audience.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of saying it. Is he's carved out a certain niche. Yeah, because like Resident Evil itself is a franchise in terms of the movies, even though it steers so far left of the plots of the original video games.
But it kind of has to, like, to keep going for that long. It kind of has to develop further than. All right, running through this corridor, you're gonna fight a zombie and you fucking beat a boss, and then you run through this corridor and fight a zombie and beat a boss. Like,
yeah, but the original movie and then the original video game, you kind of can see, like, all right, they've gone into the mansion. He's got the Umbrella Corp. It's like the T virus and all that sort of shenanigans. And
you're all going to die down here.
Yeah, it's got some nods to, you know, like the video game, like the dogs and you know, all that sort of shit. And but then once it starts getting into the whole, like, right, she's a cloned super being, and, you know, and then it just starts getting, like, a bit fucking wacky.
But the audience is along for that ride.
Oh, 100%. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying from a purist.
Sure. I mean, did he have anything to do with Welcome to Raccoon City?
The TV show.
Oh, I thought it was like a Netflix movie.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the one with what's his fucking face, the guy just died, I was going to say LeVar Burton, but no, because I'm thinking of the sketch where he comes out as Lance Riddick.
Right, I haven't seen that. No, sorry, you said the guy who's just died, and I was thinking in my head, trying to search for the name Carl Weathers.
Oh, Carl Weathers is
you
dead,
said
yes.
Lance Riddick, and in my head, I thought Lance Hendrickson.
No.
So in my, it gave a little chuckle to be like, how the fuck did you confuse those two people? but yeah, Lance Reddick, not Lance Hendrickson.
Enough spaff. Should we go sit down and watch this movie?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
3, 2, 1.
It is movie talk time.
All right, back in the room. Craig, first thoughts?
Well, okay, my first thought is the big positive of recording in the bedroom is I've got the TV in here, so I've just got Mortal Kombat now playing on mute in the background.
Sweet.
So there's that. That's a big win of the day.
That is a big win
of the day. The big loss of the day is I've got Mortal Kombat playing in the background. I'm being unfair. It's not great. And the reason I think it's not great is because I'm jaded by Enter the Dragon.
Right, okay.
And that's my big problem, is, like, you're not as good as Enter the Dragon.
I don't think it's trying to be. I don't know. I would say that it's less of a rip and more of a homage.
Homage? We're using a sweet, sweet homage? All right. Fine.
Homage.
No, honestly, I didn't hate it. It's, what, 28, 29 years old? So it's gonna look a bit janky at times.
Yeah, especially some of the CGI in this.
Yeah, that little chameleon thing. I don't know, man.
I think they tried to do the best they could.
Yeah. but then you look at Goro. At times, I think Goro's a puppet, right?
Yes,
and he looks fucking dynamite.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he's fantastic. That's aged well.
Yes.
Well, this is what we've always said. You know, practical
use
effects.
Prosthetics. Yep.
Yeah, just like. It's there, like, and I kind of feel that there is that sort of uncanny valley with not just obviously the CGI when you're looking at it, but I think the actors as well. When I just think it's instead of standing in a green screen looking at a tennis ball or whatever,
it gives you some scope, you can kind of react to what's going on and not kind of guess and double guess and triple guess and all that sort of nonsense. But you know, look, the movie isn't, how to best put this, there's no particular story here.
How do you mean?
We got three people that need to come to a tournament to fight in the 10th round of Mortal Kombat, and if Shang Tsung and his team with Goro wins, they get to rule Earth. That's the plot.
They get to invade the realm.
Yes.
There's a lot of dumping in this movie. Yeah. That's the only thing that I would think. Like,
but,
doesn't saddle it. I think it has to. Like,
but that's plot.
Yeah, go on.
That's plot. That's not story. Yes. That is plot. And so we've got characters coming in. Like, at one point, Johnny Cage is with Sonya and he's like, oh, God, I need to protect you, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, wait, when did you guys fall in love? Or like, they're saying things like, yeah, these are my friends. I'm like, when did you become friends?
I made a few notes about stuff like
when did any of this happen? But like, and that's what I mean. Like, there is a plot. The plot is we've got to protect the Earth. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm with you there. Now show me the character interactions to make me give a fuck.
Yeah, let's go through a bit of the plot and then sort of maybe discuss some of those points. So obviously we've got some kick-ass techno hitting us off, and it is the 90s as well, so we've got a lot of high trousers.
Yeah, we do.
A lot of high, bring that back. But we also get the kind of, I'd say the motivation for Liu Kang, which is opens up with Shang Tsung beating up Liu Kang. Now, this, for me... Like,
no, it opens up with him killing his brother, doesn't it?
Yeah, is that not what I said?
No, you said beating up Liu Kang.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Ah.
Liu Kang's brother. So, the thing what I... So, that was... He killed his brother at a tournament, right?
Yeah.
You know, so, and took his soul and what all that jazz. And then Liu Kang wakes up in a sort of, you know, fit of sweat. And he's got a little telegram that says, your brother's dead. And you're like, cheers.
He wakes up in fucking neon green as well.
Yeah, interesting colour choice.
I liked it. I like the... I mean, Paul W.S. Anderson, he knows how to do a colour palette of a movie. All of his movies look engaging. You know, he's not dull.
It is interesting. And the one thing I don't get then is like, right, so there's nine... Well, this is going to be the 10th tournament. I thought these tournaments are kind of like once in a lifetime sort of thing. But this sounds like there was a tournament last week. So, yeah, so you're like, well, so how many tournaments are there that you can... This happens and you get this fucking telegram and it's like...
Yeah. Hey, also, you know what, Raiden? Maybe bring him in on the 7th tournament.
But
you know, don't leave it to the 10th.
You've left it a little last minute to bring in your best guys, considering that you're like 9-0 down. And
No. We'll sub on Messi in extra time. Don't worry about
it. Yeah, that's how it feels. But then it's just like, well, if it's like, if that happened last week then, and then you kind of look at, use that timeline to go back, if there's like a fucking tournament every month or every fucking year or whatever fuck it is, that's a lot of people that you've got to find to go to this fucking tournament. And the fact that it's been, they're like, we've never been this close before. You're like, all right, fair enough. But then, yeah, it just doesn't
The argument that Raiden's the villain because he needed to pick Liu Kang's younger brother. Is he younger brother?
I would think so.
Let's go with brother. Liu Kang's
younger brother.
To die, to give Liu Kang, who's a non-believer, the incentive to fight. You know, but that, my friend, that story.
That's because Liu Kang goes to, I don't know, Tibet or wherever he is.
Oh, he goes to Rambo 3. Don't even worry about it.
And, you know, he meets up with all the monks and stuff like that. And he's like, hey, I'm going to enter the fucking tournament. I'm going to avenge my brother's death. And all the monks are like, ah, shut the fuck up. You get out of here. You've been away for too long. And then obviously the most Chinese looking guy ever rocks up. The Chinese god of lightning and thunder. And then he's just like, change your plans. Or,
I don't think so.
I don't. And obviously, they've tried to make that a catchphrase for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they did.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And then he's just a bit like, now, this is something that I have a trope in these kind of movies where it's kind of like, oh, he's going to fucking go on some big challenge, fight to the death. He's not ready. And then you're just like, all right, if he's not ready and he's had, like, let's say, the last 20 years to train as a martial artist, what do you think is going to happen in this fucking day or two that you got with him that's going to change and turn that around? And I know it's almost like metaphorical because it's like you need to believe in yourself sort of thing. But for, you know, when, like, we talk about this, talk about shit team talks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where we've been standing on a pitch and it's pissing down. We're like, we're fucking getting our asses kicked. We're like, you know, we're three tries behind. And someone's like, come on, lads, a little bit more effort. And you're like, oh, is that what I needed to do?
Hit hard, pass more, tackle lower, all that
like
shit.
It's like slapping your fucking forehead. It's like, oh my God. And you're just like, so for me, whenever they do these kind of like, oh, because later in the movie when he's fighting Kitana on the beach and they're having that fucking diatribe between themselves where they're just like, she's putting him in an arm lock, it's like, you need to use the fucking element of life or whatever it is, and he's like, what the fuck are you talking about, like, we're fighting to the death here.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'd say they're flirt fighting. You need to
believe in yourself. And then I was a bit, the thing that I just want to touch on that is just like, fucking stop talking to me in fucking riddles. Like, tell me what I need to do, and I'll do it. But
like,
yeah,
can I just say, Loki, my least favorite one of those, like, again, just jump back to the rugby, is it's 0-0, lads. Oh, no, it's not. We just scored. it's not. Agreement. We're ahead. I understand.
Oh, if we want to start badgering people, we just start talking about Rory's team talks, and it's like, come on, lads, this is the fortress, and you're like, you're looking around, they're like, our sports field's literally called Dog Shit Park.
Yeah.
it's called DSP. It's literally a fucking piss poor, like, waterlogged or concrete, depending on.
Sorry,
fucking...
lads, can't play today. There's too much broken glass on the halfway line.
Yeah, mate, like, it's just like, we have to go around and literally scrape dog shit off our pitch before the game starts.
Fortress!
Like, this is the fortress, lads. Let's put him to the sword. And you're like, all right, mate, well, I'll see you off in 5 minutes when you go and fall down and pretend you've hurt yourself. And then you're like, and you're just looking around. It's like, I've given up a fucking weekend because you obviously need a fucking day off afterwards after a fucking game. And you're just like, what the fuck am I doing? Like,
yeah, but Adam, fucking, Adam, it's no-no, man. Just keep that same intensity. It's no-no.
Okay, put a bit more effort in. Like, push. So we also get some other character motivations going on here. So we've got Sonya.
Yes.
She's in a Blade nightclub, and she's got a big fucking shotgun with a flashlight, which looks pretty cool as she's walking through. But then she's battering like about 50 guys she's walking through the club with a fucking shotgun. And I was just a bit like, you know when you're just a bit like, I bet these people are just like, they're just here just having a good time.
That's a good point.
I'm getting fucking a shotgun butt in my fucking face. I'm just enjoying myself.
You could get away with that if you made it a BDSM club. Yeah, and then they're like, the joke is that they enjoy it.
But it's not even that she, like, there's some guy that gets in her way, like some sort of like bouncer, like, oh, where are you going sort of thing.
I don't think so.
It's the fact that she literally hits about 50 people on the way. She's literally just cracking heads for no fucking reason. It's like, all right, okay. Yeah. Obviously to show you that she's a badass.
She is a badass, and you're right, it is absolutely a Blade nightclub.
It's a little bit Matrix-y as well.
Thank you. I'm in my head, I'm trying to think. I'm like, I've seen that shotgun, and someone like kicks it over someone's shoulder and blasts them in the back. Yes, it is absolutely the shotgun that Trinity uses in the foyer scene.
Matrix.
Yeah.
Now, another sort of thing I did notice was that when she confronts the guy on the stairs, he whips out his fucking Uzi or whatever, and then he gets the first couple of shots off, and she's just standing there really nonchalant, just fucking shoots him. And I was a bit like, I'll just shoot him. Fair enough.
That's a kind of question mark for you, which is fine. Her whole thing is she wants to find and kill Kano because Kano killed her partner, who we've not seen. That's fine.
Which is fair.
Johnny Cage's whole thing is that he's upset that newspapers think that his movie Martial Arts is fake, which it is. It absolutely is, because it's a movie, and that's there. I mean, the stunt team is there, fucking not knowing when to fall down.
Because he's meant to be an accomplished martial artist. It'd be like going to see the new Roadhouse and then complaining that Conor McGregor is not actually punching those people.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, this movie's using fake blood.
And I think you could argue that it's meant to be a bit of a dig at martial artists like Jean-Claude Van Damme, who was a kickboxer beforehand and then got into the action movies. Maybe Steven Seagal. So we have now the three main driving, like, motivations behind the characters. So you have Liu Kang wants to avenge his brother, Johnny Cage wants to prove himself, and he's been on the movie set, and his agent or his old mentor or something like that come up to him, but it wasn't really, because it was Shang Tsung in disguise. Now, did you know that on that movie set, when the director on that set comes down,
get him,
does he look like anyone?
I'm really glad that this is... I made a mental note as I was watching, like, do not forget the Steven Spielberg ripoff. Do not forget the Steven Spielberg ripoff.
So he was... That was meant to be Steven Spielberg.
It was supposed to be Senor Spielbergo himself.
Yeah, so they obviously had to get his non-union Mexican equivalent.
It's bueno.
But originally, Steven Spielberg has said, yeah, he would do it. Yeah. It just came down to a scheduling conflict. Because apparently Steven Spielberg's a massive fan of Mortal Kombat.
Awesome. I love that. And if it was really Steven Spielberg, that's great. Obviously, he then does his own little cameos himself in...
Austin Powers.
Thank you. Which is great. I love that. I disagree with you. My little friend here does too. That's such a good line. I mean... the balls to say, well, we haven't got Spielberg, but you know what, glasses and a hat fix the problem.
Exactly. So they've all been told to get on this boat, right?
Yeah.
And then you have Liu Kang sort of dump off Johnny Cage's bags. It's quite a nice little bit. I liked his... Johnny Cage obviously has the best lines in the movie. It's like, well, glad I didn't ask him to park the car. Then they get on that rinky dink boat.
Yeah. Right, so this is great because Sonya's got a partner. Mm-hmm.
That's meant to be Jax, the guy with the metal arms.
Yeah, he comes into it in the second one, right?
In the second one.
Yeah.
Different actor, but...
Which, you know, that works, that's fine. But the fact that he's like, what the hell is that? It's like, dude, it's obviously a ship. You're at the docks. It's got sails. Like, I don't know, man. Use your eyes.
Yeah, it's a bit of like a, you know, sort of Chinese / sort of Viking long
kind of thing. It's got the dragon head on the front of it. It kind of looks like the curse for the Black Pearl.
Yeah, I'll
or
give
just
that.
The Black Pearl, I guess. In terms of like when it turns into a ghost ship, I mean.
Oh, yeah, it does some weird sort of like magic shit where he does the snake coming out of the skull, and it's just like, oh, it's been gone. But then also you get a very, very, blink and you miss it, sort of shadow of Shao Kahn, who's the big bad guy, who obviously turns up right at the end
the
of the
Emperor.
Movie. The Emperor. But then, so one of the, you know when you just watch a scene, like, right, you've had to set this up somehow, like where you have a little bit of conflict and you just have Johnny Cage just looking out onto the sea. And then Sonya Blade just comes off like stage left, and then you know, just bumps into him in the most like fucking slapstick kind of shit way possible.
Oh yeah, Laurel and Hardy would have been proud of this.
And then she like her first immediate thing is to whip out a fucking gun and point it at his face, and you're just like, ah, okay, nice to meet you. And and then you have that interaction with her, and then. They're like, oh, we'll just follow her down the stairs as well, just to make sure she's all right.
Yeah, but they're friends by this point, because,
you know... But that's it. It has these weird relationship things. It's like, well, I don't like you.
I like you, Ray.
So they go down, and this is, like, for me, when I was a kid, the best bit of the fucking movie.
When?
The reveal
of Sub-Zero and Scorpion.
Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Because, A, it blew my mind, because they're meant to be, you know... enemies, mortal enemies, as Shang Tsung says, and then, you know, but under my control. You know,
yeah, sure. I mean, honestly, sort of it's a case of yeah, sure, and you get a couple of. I gotta say, I really like the little snake chain coming out of Scorpion's hand. I think that holds up.
Yeah, I find that's a bit of just a weird decision because you know, in the video game, like obviously the spear and the rope come out of nowhere, sort of thing. But it just felt like you didn't need to explain where it came from, and obviously it being a little fucking monster with a mouth sort of thing is an interesting touch. And obviously you have the video game developers, the people that created the video game writing for this, so it's kind of like if they check it off, it's like, okay, cool, well that's, you know, canon, you know what I mean, into that world. But you're just a bit like, oh yeah, it's just such a weird sort of aesthetic choice, isn't it?
It is always, as I said, I quite liked it, and I think it lays the foundations for him doing an Alien / Predator movie, you know, because he can do that sort of like, if you think about it, like, okay, the weird creature comes out of the palm, but it's no different to the chest burster coming out of John Hurt's chest, like,
yeah,
it's got the body horror that Paul W.S. Anderson is now kind of known for.
Yeah, no, that's a good shout, that's fair. The thing I find quite funny about that scene as well is like, because Christopher Lambert fucking rocks down the stairs in a ball of lightning and fucking fries Scorpion and Sub-Zero, and then sort of reconfigures himself, and he's like, oh, you know, what the fuck are you doing? I told you, know, you can't assault my guys before the tournament starts. And I was a bit like, but A, they didn't.
Yeah.
They were just there. And then B, you've just done that to fucking Sub-Zero and Scorpion. And I was like, but so really, you've just broken the rules yourself.
That's it. Like, there's just a load of clickety-clack in terms of... Because it doesn't matter. This is the other thing. It doesn't matter. The movie's not about being a movie. The movie's about giving the audience not a video game, but also kind of a video game. Like, so yeah, I've got it rolling in the background right now, and I've just, you know, watched the Sonya versus Kano fight.
Yeah, fair.
There's no substance to it. There's no, like, stakes or anything. You know, it ends with the line of, like, come on, Sonya, give me a break. Okay, snap. But, like, that's it. That's her journey now. It's done. I clocked it at maybe an hour in. They kill Goro. And I was where the fuck is the rest of this 40 minutes?
Mate, that really got me as well. Because after it's like rewatching it, and you just kind of like, in your head, you're like, all right, Johnny Cage kills Goro, and that's it. And you're like, oh, no, wait, they're still like, fucking, they've got to go to the Nether Realm or Outworld or whatever. And then Liu Kang's got to fight fucking Reptile.
Yeah.
And then you're like, this whole fucking, I've kidnapped Sonya to try and make her fight because she's like the weakest fighter or whatever. And then there's this whole like bit with them and Kitana. They fucking, you know, sneak in and then challenge. And then there's like, oh, and then he's got to fight four other fucking guys before. And he's just a bit like, yeah, when's the fucking showdown? Like, that's, you know, it. When's like, the...
And I've got no problem with it in terms of, all right, you're setting out just to kind of take a smash 'em and bash 'em fighting game,
yeah,
and put that to a movie. We saw it with Street Fighter. When they tried to add plot, it didn't work.
Now, I can tell you why some of this has happened. Now, because you're thinking, like, yeah, they get there and there's a fucking other fight and all this sort of fucking shit. And then, so they did a test screening. Goes down well, but what is noted is that there's not enough fight scenes in, obviously, a fighting game movie. So,
yeah,
the Johnny Cage and Scorpion fight, which kind of feels like it comes out of nowhere.
Which is currently rolling on the TV right now, yes.
Nice. Which is great. Like, aesthetically, in that forest, looks fucking awesome. And then they suddenly...
go to another dimension.
Teleport into this... but that teleporting into the other dimension bit was a reshoot.
Okay.
So, all right, so they so originally that fight's meant to end in the forest.
Okay.
They go into hell, have like the awesome bit, you know, the fucking scorpion fatality.
Yes, with the skull and the flames.
100%. And then you also have the reptile Liu Kang fight.
Yeah.
Which is also a reshoot. Now during these reshoots, this is where Robin Shao comes in to his own, because he choreographs those fights.
Nice.
And they are by far obviously the best fights.
Yes,
in,
absolutely.
In the,
like,
movie.
And look, we mentioned Blade earlier.
Yeah.
Blade 2 is, as we discussed, my favourite Guilty Pleasure sequel. And one of the main reasons for that is that Donnie Yen and Wesley Snipes did all the fight choreography.
Yeah.
And it looks fucking awesome. And all credit to this film, it kind of does that same thing with Quick and the Dead does, which is like to make all the gunfights look different. One of them's up close and personal with crash zooms. One of them's in the rain where they're running towards one another. One of them's like this. One of them's like that. And so here we're fighting in a forest, so it's evergreen. We've got fighting in this like scaffolding hell dimension for some reason.
Yeah.
There's just ladders. It all looks different. When Liu Kang fights... But the fight there, so that final fight of Shenzhen and Liu Kang, it's up close and personal when it's like moving around them ever so slightly, almost like the dance scene in Pulp Fiction. Like it's doing different things.
I kind of look at it more like it gives an aesthetic of like a stage in like a fighting game. It's like, here is the, you know, sort of like the forest level.
Yeah.
Here is the,
that as well. So we've got different levels and we've got different styles of shooting, and it's like, great. I mean, again, looking at the screen, Scorpion's head's just exploded like fucking one of the vampires from Dust Till Dawn. It's like, cool, we got different stuff going on. That's awesome. But then you've got other filler crap in the middle that doesn't hold up.
But that's the thing. I think this like pacing goes off. And to be fair to Wes Anderson, this is like his only second big movie.
Paul W.S. Anderson.
As sort of said beforehand, that Wes Anderson...
Stop calling him Wes Anderson.
...doesn't know how to... Paul, I'm going to do this all fucking episode.
Mr. Anderson. Just call him Paul Mr. Anderson.
W.S. Paul W.S. Anderson has never really done martial arts before.
Yeah.
You know, he's never done fighting. So this is where he obviously has Mr. Anderson. hence why Robin Shue's such a big help, because Anderson is doing more wide shots.
Yeah.
He's doing like a lot of, you know, sort of like trying to get them both in.
Yeah.
And then Shao's like, oh no, it's a lot of like close-ups. You got to make sure you're getting in and showing the little bits, you know, the blocks and the punches and things like that. But it makes for an interesting, slight difference in the style of Mortal Kombat from a Bruce Lee movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And compared to a Bruce Lee movie where it's like 50 guys versus Bruce Lee and he doesn't get hurt because they don't think to bundle on him.
Yeah.
This in, you know, the one-on-ones in this are really great.
Do you know what, like, that just reminds me of what really kind of like pisses me off, this little pet peeve that happens in this movie is that Shang Tsung, whenever he stands up and he goes flawless victory, No. Those weren't flawless victories.
Yeah.
Flawless victories are perfect, as in you didn't take any hits or damage during the round.
Yeah.
So when an opponent punches you in the face, you do not get a flawless fucking victory.
No, it's the clue's in the title there.
Yeah. Also, as well, when he you know, in the first fight when Liu Kang beats the guy with the dreads, and then he like sorbs his soul, and he goes fatality.
Yes.
Like, who are you saying that to?
That's it. Like, there's really not much else to this film.
Yeah, there isn't. Just some other sort of cool bits. Obviously, the whole Goro fighting stuff like that.
Yeah, of course, we need to talk about Goro.
Okay, let's talk about Goro.
His introduction is his hand on the gate or something as he watches Liu Kang, right?
Yes.
All I could think of was Mac and Me.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's just like, it's E.T., it's Mac and Me, and now it's Goro. Like, there's the holy trinity of fucking weird monsters in movies. He's got the forearms, and he's about 8 foot tall, and when he's a puppet...
I like his... you say that's his introduction, but it's more like when you see his shadow on the wall, and then Johnny Cage is like, all right, Sonya, you go find out what that is.
Yeah, that's great. Little comedy moments like that are absolutely... killer, but he's presented as the baddest of bads, and when he's like he's ready to rip Kano's fucking head off whilst he's eating
I like that interaction, because it's a bit like, you know, Kano massively out of his depths sort of thing, and then Shang Tsung obviously comes and says like, oh, you know back on his world he is a fucking big thing, but he's obviously, the qualities are slightly different, he's a fucking sniveling weasel. And then
It. I mean, he's not Goro is kick-ass, and he's the big bad boss in Mortal Kombat for a reason.
I kind of do wish that he did, you know, when he fights, like, to finish him, you know, he grabs his arms and he's obviously got his other two arms free, and he's like, right, he's like, just kill him, and then he just sort of clubs him on the chest, and I feel like, oh, he should have ripped his arms off.
That's it. There needed to be more things like that, and I think if you go for a hard R, you would maybe have less money because you'd be less accessible to a wider audience.
You could have done is you could have had that character as Jax, the guy who eventually does get his arms ripped off.
There's
the other black guy. That's like, why, you know, you could just mold them together.
Yes, that works. That would be so good.
Because again, it's like, why have a character that doesn't exist? And then insert him in, and then try and make him a character.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing is that obviously they've spoken to him for like 5 seconds, and they're like, "Oh, hey, you're what's his face? I saw you fight that one time." And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And then like later, they've had no more interaction with this guy, and then they're watching him fight Goro, and they're like, no, no. And he's like, why do you care? Like, I don't care about this guy. Like,
So in my original watching of this, I'm going to be completely honest with you, I checked out.
I think I forgive you for that as well. There are moments, because I think in this movie is very much a, and I suppose this would probably actually be me guilty of this doing when this movie came out, or I got it on like VHS, was just, all right, let me fast forward this bit. Let me just get to the next fight scene. Oh, I don't give a fuck about Katana. Oh, it's the fucking Liu Kang Katana fight. Who gives a fuck? Let me just get to the fucking Sub-Zero fight.
Yeah.
Let me just get to the fucking Reptile fight. I want to see Reptile get fucking knocked and then him flipping on the wires out the wall sort of thing. That's the fucking cool shit.
Yeah, you want the money shots.
100%. Yeah. And you kind of, as much as, using the metaphor of porn, as much as we do like a little bit of story to get us going, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, I need to see some penetration. You know what I mean?
Wow. I agree with you with everything you said, the porn thing. I checked out the movie. Currently, it's rolling and I've got Goro fighting Art Lean, is his name.
Oh, yes.
But before that, I didn't notice it the first time I watched it, but there were no fewer than 15 just nameless faces getting knocked to the floor. I assume by Goro.
But that's like, that as well. Because if you look at it, it's like, it's just three people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same three people doing a fucking cowboy role.
As well. It's the same guy, but he's in a black suit. Now he's in a white suit. Now he's in a red suit. Now he's in a black suit again.
There's like so many nameless faceless people. Because you have all those guys in like the red hankies, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. I do like that in terms of like industrious filmmaking. But in the background of this Goro fight, you've got a load of like, who the hell are they? We've got the guys in the red face masks type deals.
Yeah.
And then just a load of other guys. It's like, how many people were brought onto this island from that boat? Anyway.
There is a good, because it becomes a bit of a lumberjack match that as well, when they're like on the ropes and they're getting pushed back in. And you're like, no, 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 let me hang on the ropes.
he needs a breather. But there you go. Goro's just fucking knocked Art Lean to the ground and everyone's like, no, even though they don't know him.
Yeah, also the other thing as well, like, talking about the red hanky guys, you know, when they all sort of turn up when the three of them are in Goro's lair, you know, at the dining table.
Yes.
And then the techno music kicks in. Yeah. And I was like, oh man, they're really getting their money's worth out of this song, aren't they? Because it comes up, like, that song plays like three or four times during the movie and you're like, nice. It's a good song.
It's just... it works. It's good, it's like a pump up song. It's good.
Very much so.
Goro, right. So Goro's a badass. He's got four arms, he's 8 foot tall. But wouldn't you know, a swift kick to the nuts and he's gone.
I think that do anybody in.
I don't know.
Obviously,
man.
It hurts Johnny Cage as much as it hurts Goro.
Which implies that he's got brass fucking balls. But we're ripping off the Jean-Claude Van Damme splits.
Yes. Yeah,
and then he just pushes him off a cliff.
Well, he does knock a few bells of shit out of him on top of that cliffside.
It's not a fight. It's a couple of hits. It's not.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Whenever I watch that, I always think that what it is that Johnny Cage is hiding behind the cave entrance, and when Goro steps out, Johnny Cage does the old like look out, and then sort of like pushes him. But he actually does kick his ass, and you're a little bit like, oh, okay, I see. So Johnny Cage can fight, and you know, he's avenging his $500 sunglasses, and you're just like, all right, he's that was his arc in a way, weirdly, even though like it's like your arc is to like believe in yourself, you know, you're afraid of people thinking that you're a fake martial artist and all this bullshit, and then he knocks Goro in the nuts and then he runs away. You're like the old Ranchambeau, and then just leg it. Oh yeah, that's a plan. That's a plan that I used to do in fucking secondary school.
So I just imagine you being the Goro of your secondary school, if I'm honest.
No. I was very much the
Sonya Blade
getting Goro'd.
But no, yeah, and that's it. That's the movie, right? And it ends with this fight between Liu Kang and.
By that time, he was a little bit like, right, I've seen what this movie's got to offer. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Shang Tsung, right? It's going to happen, get defeated. The whole, like, fucking, the soul stuff, like, when they come out the floor and you're a bit like, all right, okay, you've got to fight these generic fucking bad guys who have no relation to the franchise. Yeah. It'd be cool if they were like some fighters that, you know.
Yeah,
like
if he brings up Art Lean to give him a scene, you know, he's taking his soul. Art Lean can come back and fight Liu Kang. And if you've set up this like friendship of like, oh my god, I love you, Liu Kang. I love you too, Art Lean. No, I don't want to kill you, but I'm already dead. It doesn't matter. You know, something like that. Again, story. That would
be. Yeah, he could have brought back his brother also as well. Liu Kang is a descendant of Kung Lao, all right? And Kung Lao, if you remember, is the guy with the hat. You know, the guy that can fucking throw the hat like a frisbee.
Odd job in Blofeld? No, odd job in Blofeld. Odd job in Goldfinger.
It's slightly like that. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think there's a few bits and pieces which were like, I wouldn't say missteps in terms of the writing. I just think you could have done more fan service.
You could probably really lose at the end of the day. A couple of fights and include just a bit of extra character development.
Well, that's the thing. That was what the test audience said.
Test audiences are stupid. Test audiences are dumb. No. This is the biggest sin of this movie. Yeah. Nowhere near enough Christopher Lambert.
The whole thing with Christopher Lambert not being in the movie that much is because he originally brought on his pay is like quite substantial, so they're like, right, we'll just have him doing all his shots in LA in the studio, and that's why you don't really see too much of him in any of the other scenes. And if you do, it's very much like wide shots and it's a stand-in.
Sure,
right, but. Because Christopher Lambert is an absolute chad, he did fly out to Thailand or wherever they shot it and did extra scenes at no extra cost.
Sorry, judge is ruling. I need to know what you mean by an absolute chad, because I'm clearly not down with the kids.
An absolute G, a top man.
Okay, cool.
And he apparently just made the filming process really, really easy on Wes Anderson. Paul W.S. Anderson. Because he's obviously like a very experienced actor. And yeah, apparently just all round good guy to be on set with.
Fair enough.
Nice. Which is very nice. Final thoughts?
Honestly, I have nothing but love and respect for Christopher Lambert. Highlander is and will forever be one of my favourite films. Absolute guilty pleasure, but still favourite films. This is better than Street Fighter. And
yeah, I'll give you that.
Also worse at the same time.
Well, I think the moment's come, and the difference between Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat is that Street Fighter is, you know, written in a day, and it's written by someone that's not got that firm a grasp on a video game that doesn't really have that much story to it.
Yeah.
Whereas Mortal Kombat is a little bit more lore and story to it.
Yeah.
And you have the guys who wrote and created the game on board on the writing team. Mm. So I think it's always going to stick more to, you know, the source material.
Mm.
And I think when you have to then sort of like, right, we have to turn this video game where the source material, the lore is like a screenshot. You know what I mean? It pops up when you select a character or when you finish the game. It's like, oh, this is what happened. And you're like, all right, okay, cool. That's as much story as you kind of get. So to turn that into like an hour 20 or whatever it is, it's always going to be challenging, especially as well because you want to appeal to slightly wider audience. But at the time, this is like 95, so Mortal Kombat's fucking hot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's very publicised due to all the violence from the game, hence obviously the, you know, introduction of video games rating standards.
Yeah.
So it's in the news, everyone knows what Mortal Kombat is, so then to go out and, you know, make this movie, do you have to bridge that gap more than say like a Street Fighter? Probably not.
I think you like, do if you're looking at longevity.
Mm,
and that's it. I mean, we're looking at this fucking 30, 29 years later.
It's still, but the thing is, I'll say that this is, I like it. I think it still holds up as.
But you're looking at it from the eyes of someone who watched it at that time. Someone who fell in love with it at that time.
But what I'm saying, as an adaptation of a video game, and you kind of think of, like, what. The only, like, in terms of recent, releases of video game adaptations, you've had, like, Mario, which is done really, really well. Trying to think of some ones that have been shite, like what, like Assassin's Creed.
Assassin's Creed wasn't for me.
Prince of Persia.
Didn't see it.
The countless Evil. Obviously other remakes of So I think, like, for what it did for video games, movie tie-ins, this is phenomenal. Like. You know, and you can see that from the box office, the fact that it made, you know, like 6 times back its budget.
Yeah. Oh, this is the other thing. Sorry. Was it 27 million?
Made for 20.
Yeah, right. Made for 20.
Brought in 120.
Made for 20. Holy shit. Like, well done, movie. That's like, this doesn't look like a $20 million movie.
No, I do get you. But then you kind of think of actually looking around, like, you're thinking, what would 20 million get you? Like, think about the sets that they built. That's probably painting. You've got to have, like, animatronics.
No, this is what... But I'm complimenting it. Like, it looks more expensive. Enough. It looks like... Yeah, if you told me this cost 40 million, I'd be like, oh, okay, I get it, because there's a lot of, at the time, graphics and blah, blah, blah. It would be interesting to know. Okay, here's a quick comparison point. I'm just going to quickly check something, because... Oh, shit. Okay, interesting. The Power Rangers movie, also 1995, previous episode, also costs 20 million.
Nice.
This looks like it costs double that. Ivan Ooze's CGI nonsense in that film looks worse than the even the CGI Goro or the CGI teleportation water gloop shit that you see at some point. Like, I really think it holds up for 20 million. It's like, good job the movie. There's a lot to be said for this movie. It did pave the way for video game adaptations doing incredibly well. There aren't many video game adaptations that have done incredibly well. Like I said, Resident Evil, the new animated Super Mario Brothers movie, and I'm sure we're missing a few.
Loads.
I mean, there has to be tons that we've just, like, I can't even. I mean, I've never seen a Halo movie or TV show.
Mate, the Halo TV show is the fucking worst. It's like it does the Judge Dredd
they take off the helmet,
like, he removes his fucking helmet and takes a fucking
but no, honestly, like, I was texting you throughout the watching of it, being like, this isn't very good, this isn't very good, but talking about it now, hearing all the stuff, having it on in the background, I'm like, I did love this when I was a kid. Maybe I'm just jaded at 32.
You are. You're jaded.
I am.
You're lying on your back in bed, feeling sorry for yourself.
I am.
Not being able to appreciate Wes Anderson.
Right, that has been our episode on Mortal Kombat with a K. This has been the Admin Craze Guilty Pleasure Cinema Podcast, our first of 2024. Maybe our last of 2024. Hey, who knows? We will be back next week or later with another episode on... fuck it. Why not? From Dusk Till Dawn. On that note, you can find us on Instagram at Adam and Craig's GPC. You can find us on Twitter, X, Threads, your local video store, etc, etc, etc. He has been Adam, I've been Craig, and that was Mortal Kombat. Adam,
what?
It's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
I need to work on my sign-offs.
Yeah, we both do. Right, stop.
We are watching a movie that we are talking about. So sit back and relax, and it's time to talk about it. Talk about it. Maybe get some popcorn, or maybe some snacks. talking about.
Like there's been Mortal Kombat remakes.
Sorry, one second.
Bless you.
There you go, there's the end credit sequence.
It is movie talk time.